Welcome to the Winter's Business Lunch with me, Jisuki. Sorry about that. That was not a technical error. That was a user error. I hope you're having a good Thursday. I hope you're hanging in there. I hope you and your loved ones are healthy and well. Let's get started with Greg McBride, who's with us right now. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how are you?
Fantastic. Okay, so a lot going on right now. Skyrocketing unemployment claims and rallying oil prices. Can you just give us a synopsis of where we are right now?
Well, the unemployment claims, if we thought last week was bad, this week was literally twice as bad. Of course, last week, 3.25 million people filed for those initial unemployment claims. And the number that came out this morning, 6.6 million. The last 2 weeks, it's almost 10 million people that have filed unemployment claims. Now, that does include those that are furloughed and might be called back, but, there's no sugarcoating it. This is, we're in a recession. It may be a deep recession, and the only question is, how long does it last? And unfortunately, there's more of those ugly numbers to come. The arrows have pointed down on oil so much. It's unusual when we see oil prices up. We had seen something similar last week as well, but then we gave a lot of that back. So a lot of volatility. There's still, I think, in addition to the rapid global economic slowdown that's pushed those prices down, you've got the price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia that's still going through its gyrations. And so, that also having an influence on prices.
Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. So, Greg, is it a surprise to you that we're in the green today after those unemployment numbers?
Well, I am surprised about that, but let's also keep in mind that markets are forward looking. Coming off the big rally last week, after hitting that low point, there's a lot of investors I think that are either looking down the road beyond this, the other side of this. But we still don't have a whole lot of certainty as to how long this economic lockdown lasts. What's that going to mean for corporate earnings? What's the trajectory on the recovery? How quickly do we see corporate earnings and employment and consumer spending rebound? So I expect we're going to see a lot of ups and downs in the months ahead, particularly as we start to get more clarity on these things.
Greg, I follow you on Twitter, and you mentioned a lot of concern, obviously, like most of us, a lot of concern about small businesses, which are a big fabric of American life, and small banks. Do you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week. I had tweeted that out about smaller banks and how they're really at the forefront of what we're seeing economically. That they take deposits from consumers in their local area. They lend out to businesses, and when that business falls on hard times and manufacturer that has to stop production for a period of time because of a stay-at-home order, that kind of thing, it has a ripple effect throughout the community. And the local bank is kind of at the epicenter of that. I think that banks are they're very cyclical by nature. They're interest rate sensitive. They're exposed to the economy. But smaller community banks really are the majority of banks in the country. They don't get the pub that the big banks get. But the in terms of most banks out there, a lot of them are these small community banks that are really going to be taking it on the chin. And small businesses, that's traditionally smaller businesses have been not only where most Americans work, but the engine of employment growth in many expansions that we see. So, seeing small businesses that not only are temporarily shuttered, but with legitimate concerns about whether or not they're going to reopen their doors, that was why you saw a lot of effort in the CARES package, the so-called stimulus package, geared toward getting money into the hands of small business owners so they can sustain employment and, be able to reopen the doors when the time comes.
And you think the CARES bill is a good start?
A good start. I would.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot more, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It is not going to be a panacea by any means. I think it's the first of, you know, probably many more measures to come, not only during this, but, you know, throughout the economic recovery as well.
Something that we need to keep an eye out for that you're not seeing right now in the headlines or that is being talked about much in your opinion.
Well, you know, the mortgage market has really had, you know, a lot of disruption to it over the, you know, last several weeks. You know, it started with, you know, the big sell-off where, you know, anything that wasn't nailed down was being sold for cash. And so that really roiled markets because a lot of what was being sold were for mortgage-backed securities. The Fed stepped in a big way in their role as the, you know, lender of last resort, basically saying we're going to buy an unlimited amount of mortgage-backed bonds in order to stabilize that market. But in so doing, upended a lot of the hedges that a lot of lenders had put into place to protect themselves from interest rate risk, and they're now facing margin calls. So there's still a lot of disruption in the marketplace. Some types of loans have really come under pressure. You know, lenders that can't find buyers for non-government-backed mortgages, they've stopped issuing those until the market stabilizes. So there's a lot of disruption in the mortgage market. It's still a lot of lenders have been inundated with refinance applications, and so the period of time it takes to get to the closing table is longer than we've seen in the past.
Well, thanks so much to Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. Joining us now on the Winterest Business Lunch is Ian Schur. He's editor at large for CNET. Hi, Ian. How are you?
Hi. I'm all right. How are you?
Hanging in there. Doing really well, I have to say, despite all the circumstances. I can't complain. Let's cover some tech news and innovation news as well. A lot of folks at home, obviously, and they're playing video games. I don't know much about video games. What kind of video games are they playing and what ages are we talking about? I hear a lot of adults play too.
Yes, a lot of adults play too. In fact, the average age of video gamers has been creeping up over the years, in part because the generation who started off with Mario some 30 years ago are now turning into adults and parents, and they are still playing. So it is actually a very popular pastime. There's some estimate of something like 2 billion people around the world. So, you know, almost a quarter or a third of the world's population. So now there are these games that are getting increasingly popular, particularly because they're social. So think of games like Fortnite, where people come together and they kind of play together. You know, maybe they're talking as well while they're playing. It actually was really popular for teenagers to come together and kind of talk before this whole mess started. Now it's getting popular again. We're starting to see anecdotal evidence that other games are also becoming more popular during this whole thing. So there was a new game that came out called Call of Duty Warzone. Call of Duty is kind of one of those shooting games, simulation of a war. It was able to attract 16 million people. That's 1/6 in its first couple days on the market. And that was just a few weeks ago. And then finally, there's this new game from Nintendo called Animal Crossing. If you ask anyone who's a video game player, they know immediately what we're talking about. It's kind of you create your own paradise type game. So it's no shooting, no war.
That sounds like my speed. That's what I enjoy.
Exactly, right? It's kind of like, it's kind of like a calmer version of Farmville almost.
Oh,
right?
Perfect
Except
for
you
me.
Don't pay extra. Right. And so what happens is that you build your own community. You get to do all sorts of stuff. One of its claims to fame is that, is that as you're doing all this, you can have your friends kind of come and visit and you can interact with each other. So anyway, it has sold exponentially more than what it did in the last version when it came out some 7 or 8 years ago, according to data from the UK and Japan. So we're starting to see that the games are really becoming popular right now in the midst of all of this. And it makes sense, right? People want kind of an escape, and they want to be able to also meet up with friends and do something other than just talk on the phone. And I imagine that makes a lot of sense.
I hadn't really thought about that, but you're right. Gamers already have a leg up on connecting virtually because I know, you know, they've been doing this for a long time, connecting with people and playing games. And then there's specialty chairs and specialty headphones and everything in terms of, you know, playing video games and getting ready for them. So really cool.
Well, and I'll give you two more examples just for a second. One person had their wedding canceled because of the coronavirus, so they had their friends come together in Animal Crossing and have a digital, a social distance wedding there. And then the other end of it, someone actually created a memorial for a family member who had died because of coronavirus in the game, right? So we're starting to see a lot of people use these things in really interesting ways.
That's the entire spectrum right there, Ian. Let's talk about Microsoft Office. It's something that we use here at WGN Radio. There's a 365 and Edge component of Microsoft and a lifelong membership to Office?
Yeah, so they're coming out with this stuff where they're trying to figure out how they can be, you know, Microsoft wants to be the next Amazon and Netflix subscription. And what they've done for, you know, decades is they've sold us Microsoft Office because we all need Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, unless maybe you're using Google stuff instead. So now they are trying to say, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to offer you a whole bunch of different software. So if you sign up for their service, which, by the way, you know, it was called Microsoft Office 365. It'll, starting in April, be called Microsoft 365 is the same thing. If you already have it, you're going to have it still. It's $6.99 per month for an individual, $9.99 for a family of up to six. So this is for consumers. And what it does is that it gives you access to, obviously, Microsoft Office, but also other stuff. For example, they're going to start having other software that they're working with. There's a company called Headspace, which is a really interesting meditation app. Bill Gates, the co-founder of Microsoft, is a big fan of it. They're going to offer access to it as part of this system, so you don't have to pay extra. Adobe's doing this too. They're getting involved. We don't know the specifics, but Adobe obviously makes Photoshop and all that type of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what they're offering as part of this. But Microsoft wants to make it more enticing. They're not just going to give you Microsoft Office. They're going to give you access to other stuff too. And hopefully for them, they want to see themselves become an essential thing that you have to get because it's so valuable.
It sounds like more bang for your buck. So you're getting a lot more for your subscription, an entire catalog, an entire suite of tools that you can use, which I think sounds really good.
Yeah, Microsoft's going hardcore into subscriptions. They also, going back to our last conversation, even have a game subscription service that they started called Xbox Game Pass, which is $9.99 a month, and it is becoming very popular. There's a lot of data that they are growing it quite quickly. So it seems as though Microsoft really sees an opportunity to get us all to give them a little bit of money every month, and it helps them to go pretty far.
It seems now everyone knows the word Zoom to mean what it means, which is the virtual video conferencing. But we didn't really know about Zoom before all, you know, this pandemic happened. Of course, you did know about it, but people are doing some unique things on Zoom to connect.
Yeah, so, you know, I think what's been really interesting is that we've seen a lot of talk about Zoom. So there's a couple of things that we've noticed. One thing is that people are having a ton of fun playing around with the different features on Zoom. So, for example, one of the features I did not know about was that you can have a gallery feature. So you can see all of the people talking at the same time. It, by default, it's turned off, but you can turn that on if you're using Zoom. It feels a lot more personal, but my work, we've been using Zoom for a long time, but we did not start using that gallery feature until recently, and it really has helped. We all comment about each other's backgrounds or if our kids are in the background with us and stuff like that. Another thing that we've seen is that people are playing with the background. So we have instructions on CNET for how to do that, like put yourself on the Starship Enterprise or be able to look like you're at the beach. We all wish. And then finally, there's actually a lot of people who are using Zoom for their businesses. So I've noticed that a number of yoga teachers that I'm connected with on Facebook are now doing Zoom. We have a really interesting story on CNET about how people are doing cooking classes, and restaurants themselves are actually having the chefs teach people, you know, for a fee, of course, but to be able to actually learn how to cook at home. And they all think that, hey, look, at least we're able to do something, you know, have a little bit of business, because most of them are just completely shut down. And they're getting, and there's actually a lot of interest in this. And I don't know, I'd love to learn from my Michelin chef myself. So it seems really cool.
So many people have not been utilizing their kitchens or turned on their stoves in so long, and they're just trying to learn the basics, which is really cool. In fact, our afternoon drive host, Ro Khan, has chefs on, and you just tell them what's in your pantry, or you tell her what's in your pantry, and you try to stump the chef based on your pantry items. So that's really cool. Yeah, lots of people learning how to cook in the kitchen. Some good news for Apple lovers. iPhone is rolling out a new phone, or is it an older phone that's going to be available?
Yeah, so
I'm confused. Is, can't you tell?
Hey, it's okay. So there's this one phone that's been around for a while called the iPhone SE. If you don't know about it, it's kind of their super low-end iPhone. It came out a couple of years ago, and it's designed to look like an older iPhone. It's smaller. It's, you know, the old small design. It's boxy instead of the kind of, you know, curves that all the iPhones are known for now. And one of the things about it is when it came out, it was super popular. People loved it because even though it looked like the old designs, it actually had internal chips that were very fast and it was able to act like a more modern iPhone. Well, it looks like Apple might be doing another one of these where they're going to offer an older looking iPhone that actually has modern chips in it. This time around, we've been hearing about it. We're calling it the iPhone 9 because we don't have a better name for it right now. But what it does is it looks like the iPhone 8. So if you go and Google iPhone 8 right now, you'll see one of the older designs with the fingerprint sensor and all that stuff, right? And it's not the sleek design with the face unlock that we have now. And one of the things about it is that all of the rumors are that it will have all the fastest chips in it. So you could buy it for cheaper than the $700 Apple charges for the iPhone 11 today, and it'll last you for a long time. And for people who don't like the face unlock or whatever else, it's a really good opportunity. So it's going to be interesting to see. But Apple's rumored to have this coming out maybe in the next 2 weeks or so. Pretty good timing considering the economy is starting to struggle. But it's something that's always been a very popular device for them. And they've only come out with one of these before. But when they did, it was cheaper than everything else. So hopefully they'll do that again.
So a bit more affordable, a little simpler to use. Yeah, that doesn't sound bad at all.
No, I think for a certain group of people, it's going to be really popular. And that's what happened last time.
A certain group of people, you mean tech challenged like myself. Thanks.
So. Well, you know, everybody's different, right? Or they also just don't care about having like the super sharp screens. Like right? Some people don't care, right? They just want a phone that they touch buttons and it dials their friends or whatever. They're not playing games. And for them, that's perfect.
Well, thanks so much for being with us today, Ian. Stay safe. Ian Schur, editor-at-large for CNET.com. A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. Winter's Business Lunch. G here. We're going to talk with a local farmer. His name is Peter Klein, and his farm's name is called Seedling. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Hey, Zoo. Good morning. Good. How are you?
Doing very well. I wanted to talk to you. Well, first of all, describe your farm and tell us what you grow.
So we have a small farm, 80 acres up in South Haven, Michigan, and we're primarily a fruit farm. We grow, anything we can in the Midwest, apples, peaches, pears, plums, nectarines, cherries, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, the whole shebang.
You've done that before.
And we do some specialty crops for restaurants, things like peppers and small fruits like gooseberries and currants, and we sell to a lot of restaurants, and we do farmers markets.
So you're not a huge commercial farm, but we wanted to talk to some small specialty farmers, and still 80 acres sounds like a lot to me, and see how everything's been going, especially in light of restaurants being closed. And then you said also farmers markets are closed, because normally Green City Market would be open and little neighborhood farmers markets would also be open right about now.
Yeah, so winter is a little odd for us because most of what we sell and produce is fresh. But we do keep some frozen stuff, like some frozen fruit, and we have an apple cider mill on the farm, so we freeze a lot of apple cider. So we usually have restaurant business all through the winter, which sort of helps support pays things like the mortgage and utilities. And yeah, all of that dropped out almost immediately. And the Green City Market, which usually does an indoor market all winter, they had to close down too because it's an inside space. And so they've really tried to pick up the slack figuring out how to do home delivery. The Green City Market's doing home delivery right now.
Have you been able to stick to your planting and harvesting schedule? I know it's a little bit different for you because you're doing fruits, but in terms of for yourself and from what you're hearing from other farmers?
Yeah, I'm pretty nervous. We haven't really kept to it. Since we're a fruit farm, most of what we already have is in the ground already as trees and plants and bushes. But we definitely do some stuff by seed every year. So we do a lot of peppers for customers. And historically, we've grown like 24 different kinds of melons, like 5 acres of melons. And I canceled all of that for the season because I'm just too nervous. I don't know what's going on at all. And I've heard that from several different people that so no one really knows if there'll be markets, if there'll be customers, or how the whole food system's going to react. So, and we don't know if we're going to find enough staff to run it all either.
Oh, so let's talk a little bit about that angle. Is it just you're looking for to make sure that you have enough skilled folks that can actually help you on the farm?
Yeah, I mean, farming's always tough in terms of finding skilled labor, and we usually have a staff that comes back because it's a seasonal business, and we just aren't 100% sure everyone's going to be able to come back or make it back or be not too scared to come back, to drive across country and come back. So we have our main staff member now. My foreman's already back, so we're taking care of business, but we just don't know. And there's really big commercial farms who need hundreds of people, and they're super nervous in terms of whether they're going to have enough bodies to do the planting, the picking, and the whatnots this year.
So the fallout from this is going to be, it's going to be coming for a long time. It's you're talking months out, or how what's the forecast on this for you?
Yeah, I don't know. I know some farmers, you know, it's interesting because I know some farmers markets like a bunch in California are still running because they consider it sort of essential, but I don't think they're getting the same crowds or the same amount of vendors. And I know several farmers markets also in California have already canceled for the season, even if they're outdoors, or canceled for a couple months. So I think we have just no idea what the markets will be and what the demand will be. And I heard from a commercial blueberry grower who's called in my neighborhood that they've heard things like in the food system, they're just not going to be promoting food as much. You know, you look at your ad and it's like 99 cents blueberries.
Mm-hmm.
And from what they're hearing right now, like those kind of promotions are going to end, which means that their volume might be lower, which means there might just be too much supply. So, man, I just think from every angle, from growing to planting to staffing, it's just completely up in the air right now.
Pete, do you know why the blueberry farmer said that those ads might be in short supply in terms of, is it because they're...
Yeah, I think usually when they, I guess what I understood is when you usually start blueberries, it's time to promote, but the store just said there's so much else going on.
Right.
And they're worried just about keeping staples in.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just not going to be doing their standard usual promotions in terms of seasonal fruits and vegetables or just products in general, because for them it's up in the air too, especially getting bodies in the store. But that's not really my area of expertise.
So that does make sense, because when you're stocking up, you're usually buying goods that are shelf stable and that can last a really long time, or canned goods, for example. Like going down the soup aisle can always be a little bit disheartening because it's the shelves are empty.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so maybe that's it. Maybe just everyone's focused on the stock-ups.
Mm-hmm. So what have you been hearing from your restaurant friends, too? Because I know that you supply, that's a huge part of your business. And just like the restaurants, and we're, talked to someone from the Retail Association yesterday, grocery stores also have a very small profit margin. Of course, small businesses in general have a small profit margin. How's it looking for you? Is there somewhere you can go for help? How's it looking for other farmers you're talking to?
Yeah, it's, I just don't know right now. I think everyone's just so scrambling right now. So many restaurants are just, as we know, shut down for a while. There's some we know doing a lot of sort of takeout and pickout, but they've really had to minimize and cut down on what they're offering. And I think a lot of people have a lot of already food in-house that they're going through.
Right.
So, our the bulk of our winter sales, for example, is really in cider, and that's for some of the juice companies and the smoothies that are done. And man, that's just kind of disappeared with people not going out of the house. So I don't know. And I know people who are doing some sort of the fresh stuff, some of the fruit, fresh vegetables and green growers. That's why one of the reasons I think the Green City Markets really tried to step up is to try to find them outlets where they can do home deliveries and get it right to people's houses.
So are you participating in that?
I'm going to try. Yeah, we just signed up to offer our apple cider and some of our apple cider products through it, too. And I think if you go to their website, you can sign up, or it tells you how to sign up. And they're just gearing up. It's new for everybody.
Well, this isn't easy work, so it must truly be a labor of love for you.
At this point, it's a labor of something. I'm not sure what. For all of us, though, you know?
If we wanted to order some cider from you, where can we go?
At this point, you go through the Green City Market website and sign up for their home delivery program. That's our best bet for now.
Well, thanks so much, Pete, for talking with us. Peter Klein, farmer, a small specialty farmer. His farm is called Seedling Farms. Thanks so much for being with us, Pete.
Bye, G. Thanks.
The Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection have been holding webinars this week to explain the Chicago Small Business Resiliency Fund. Joining us on the Winter's Business Lunch now is Kenya Merritt. She's the Chief Small Business Officer for the City of Chicago. Hi, Kenya. How are you?
Good afternoon, G. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, appreciate you being here. So I know you've been doing these webinars, but we thought, well, why don't we just bring you on the show? Because we have so many small business owners that listen to the Winter's Business Lunch. So wanted you to kind of explain. So tell us what the Resiliency Fund is, just in case someone's not heard about it.
Sure. So last week we launched the unprecedented Chicago Small Business Resiliency Loan Fund, and we're super excited about standing up this program that we feel will help so many small businesses throughout Chicago. So the fund was launched under the leadership of Mayor Lightfoot, as well as the city treasurer and the chief financial officer. And this fund will disperse over $100 million in low-interest loans to thousands of Chicago businesses impacted by COVID. And so if people are looking to learn more information about the fund, they can apply at ChicagoResiliencyFund.com. Or if they have just questions and they want to learn a little bit more about it, they can check out that website, too, for more information.
And give me the website one more time.
It's ChicagoResiliency, ResiliencyFund.com. Fund.com. And they can always find that at the City of Chicago's website. We have a link for COVID-19 resources that'll be pretty easy to navigate as well.
So can you tell me a little bit about the loans that you're giving out? You said they were low interest. Do you know what the interest rate is?
So the interest rate is actually tiered. For the first 18 months, it's 1%. After 18 months, it then goes to 5.75%. But again, it's tiered. For the first 6 months, applicants will be required to pay just a small amount, and then after 6 months to 12 months, it's a little bit more. But the intent is for the first year, the payments that small business owners will incur will be really small, and the goal is to get them back on their feet and in recovery mode. And we have, again, more details about what that means in terms of payments on our website. So business owners will get a little bit of an idea of if they take out a $50,000 loan, what that payment will look like, or if they take out a $20,000 loan. And so they can kind of figure out if those payments will work for them.
So yes. There's a bit of a tool calculator on the website that can help you figure that out.
Absolutely.
So the loans are up to $50,000?
So the loans are up to $50,000, and eligibility is determined by 3 months average revenues. In addition to that, eligibility calls for businesses that have less than 50 employees, that have been in operation for a year, and most importantly, the businesses must be within the City of Chicago.
Got it. And of course, this is the city's fund. This is an emergency relief fund started by the city. So there might be help that you can find on the state level or the federal level as well, right?
Exactly. And so what we've done here at the City of Chicago is that we recognize that there is a myriad of resources out there for small businesses, and we want them to be able to have a central place where they have access to that information. So on our website, not only do we have information related to the Resiliency Fund, we also have information related to programs that the state of Illinois is offering, as well as the federal government. So we are aware that the state of Illinois has a loan program very similar to the City of Chicago's, and their loan program is offered to businesses that are outside of the city. Additionally, the federal government, through the Small Business Administration, has launched several programs. They have a disaster loan that they're currently accepting applications, and then there's the payment protection plan that will be launched on tomorrow. And so again, businesses that are looking for resources, that are trying to figure out what's the best option for them, all of those resources are available on our website, and they can learn more at chicago.gov/COVID.
You're hearing the voice of Kenya Merritt. She's the Chief Small Business Officer for the City of Chicago. And Kenya, I know you're being inundated right now. I know that all of the city services are. I've heard from folks trying to get help for their small businesses or apply for unemployment, having difficulty maybe getting through on the website or reaching somebody via phone. But you're saying that to be persistent and to start there on the website.
To start on the website, in addition, on our website, what we have is a listing of what we call our neighborhood business development centers. And so the City of Chicago partners with over 60 different organizations throughout the Chicago to provide business development support to entrepreneurs. And what they're doing now is, again, this is an unprecedented time. They've stood up support where people can access them remotely. So via email or via telephone, we have a listing of those resources on our website with contact information. If people are trying to figure out what's the best resource for them, they can find a listing of those organizations on our site. In addition to that, here at City Hall, we, prior to COVID, we used to host workshops every Wednesday and Friday as a way to provide education and information to business owners. We've now taken that virtual. So every Wednesday at 3 o'clock and every Friday at 9:30, we're offering free webinars for entrepreneurs and small business owners to learn more about the resources that the City of Chicago has, what's happening at the state level, and then what's also happening at the federal level. And if people are looking to register for those webinars, again, they can go to our website at chicago.gov/BACP.
And I don't exactly know how the webinar is set up. Is it set up in a way that where someone watching can ask questions and get them answered as well?
Absolutely. So it's not just one direction where we're sharing information. We want to be able to also answer questions. And so we'll go through a presentation where we provide information related to what's available, and then we'll open it up for questions. In addition to that, what we also have available is our email address. And so if people have questions about the Small Business Resiliency Fund, about our webinars, how to connect to our MBDC partners, which are our neighborhood business development centers, they can reach out to us at bacpoutreach@cityofchicago.org.
Well, Kenya, we've got you on the line right now, so we're going to ask you a couple of more questions since we have you in person.
I love it.
So tell me, with this resiliency fund for small business owners, are there restrictions on how they can use the money, and is there any sort of forgiveness of a percentage of the loan at all? I know that the starting off interest rate is really low, so maybe that's not the case. So,
gee, that's a really great question. So there are actually requirements on how business owners can use the fund. 50% of the funds must be used to bring back employees or to hire employees at a level of 50% pre-COVID. And so the goal there was to get people back working. The rest of the funding can be used towards working capital.
Okay.
And you know, in terms of the employees that they're bringing back, we want to ensure that they're also employing Chicago residents. So 50% of the employees that they're bringing back must also be Chicago residents. And while the loan is not forgivable, the interest rates are actually very favorable. And we do understand that the federal government, through the SBA program, the program that they're standing up tomorrow, does have a forgivable component. And so if people are looking for a product that has that component to it, we'll have more information on our website.
So, Kenya, this question you might not be able to answer, but of course, right now, time is of the essence. Let's say that I'm able to log on. I have the paperwork. I meet the requirements. I file for this resiliency fund. I get a loan. How quickly can I get that money? How long is the processing time right now?
So here's the thing. We've set it up so that the underwriting is really flexible and is intended to be really quick. So while I don't have a timeline for you right now, we're working to get cash in the hands of small businesses as quickly as possible.
Okay, so nothing more than quickly as possible.
Yes, as quickly as possible, G.
Okay, well, you're being honest with me, so that's good. Okay, so you threw out a lot of websites out there. Is there one general website, before I get a bunch of text questions about it, that that people can go to that will link to all the other websites that you said could also be helpful?
Awesome. That's great. I know I threw out a lot, and a lot of people were probably trying to feverishly write them down.
Right.
The go-to place when you're looking for information related to financial assistance and support from the city of Chicago is chicago.gov/coronavirus, and from there you'll be able to navigate our website to find all of the resources that are available to you.
Well, Kenya, thank you so much. Kenya Merritt, Chief Small Business Officer for the City of Chicago. Thanks for all the work you do. It's more important than ever now, especially for our small businesses. Really appreciate it.
And thank you so much, G, for having us. We really appreciate you allowing us a platform to share what we consider to be very important information to our small business community.
Well, we appreciate you. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.